You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Elisa.
Time for episode 427 of Geekiest Show Ever.
It's time.
Can you believe we're in November already?
No.
I swear, as soon as I turned 18, the year went by quicker and quicker and quicker.
I'm just happy that the time's going to change, because I'm tired of this 3-hour time change.
That's nice, getting that extra hour of sleep, but then you lose it in March. But then come March, you're happy to lose the hour of sleep, because then you get longer days, more sunshine.
Well, and now that it's darker in the morning here, I have a plan, because I have smart lights and I can just set a scene and have it start the light earlier so I can wake up with, I mean, it's not natural sunlight, but at least something simulated, so it helps me wake up in the morning, because I have the lamp set to come on and wake us up.
Okay. So I see here there's some new apps that you've tried in SetApp.
Yes. One of the ones that I'm playing around with right now, it's called Typeface. It's just simply called Typeface. The app icon is really adorable. It looks like a little fox, and I guess you can guess what it's about from the app name. It's kind of like Fontbook, but better. It's got more to the interface. There's more things you can do with it. I just started playing around with it, and so I don't have a whole lot of feedback on it, but if you're a font nerd like I am, I really encourage you to check it out. If you're a SetApp user and you're looking for that perfect font for that next project that you're going to do, I'm getting ready to help out a client with some projects that they're going to be doing, so I'm going to be diving into this. But it's a way that you can basically organize your fonts and categorize them. You can tag them. You can type out, you know, a word that you're looking to set the type for. You can do all this kind of stuff in Fontbook, but this presents it in a better way. And you can organize them alphabetically. You can tag them. It even does have an area where you can click Fontbook and you can see all of the fonts that are managed in your Fontbook. I mean, I only have 7,827. I mean, it's not that many.
I only have the ones that came with the computer.
Yeah. Oh, that's boring. No.
I just don't have a use for extra fonts.
Oh, I love looking at them. I just think it's fun to look through those. So, yeah, so that's my latest play thing that I'm checking out in SetApp. There's just so many apps in SetApp, so I just wanted to highlight that one. I just thought maybe, you know, each time we get together, I'll tell you about a new app that I'm playing around with. And so that is the one that I've picked for this time. And so I just wanted to remind everybody that I am a SetApp affiliate. And so if you would be so kind as to go check out our show notes, I do have a link in there. And I have a deal for you. If you use the code TheMacMommy, all one word, you get a month free instead of just the standard 2 weeks, because that's usually what you get with a regular trial. But if you use my code, you get a whole month free to try it out. So that's a whole month that you get to play with all of the apps that are available in SetApp. And there's like over 200. So there's bound to be something in there for just about anybody who wants to try it out. So check that out.
And 30 days is a good amount of time to see if it's something that will work for you.
Yeah, and you might just like it. Who knows? So go check it out and tell all of your friends, and I thank you for checking it out. On to the next topic. Just before I left the house this morning, I decided to upgrade my new iPad Air. Last time we talked, had I told you about we talked about the new toys that I had just gotten that I upgraded to.
Yeah.
So the MacBook, not the MacBook, I'm holding it like it's a laptop here because I did just get another new toy. I got this, let me go get the link for it real quick so you can see what I'm talking about, and then I can put it in the show notes. And the funny thing is I just showed this to a couple of friends of mine recently. It's a Bluetooth keyboard. And I want to make sure that I get the proper name for it. It's made by ESR. And it's a wireless Bluetooth keyboard. It attaches magnetically. It's on sale right now. I'm going to say it's around $90. Normally, it's around $130. It's like $124. Now, the Apple keyboard is like over $200. So this one's only $90. Of course, you know, the Apple keyboard is always going to be superior. But this one's pretty good. I'm going to hold it up to the camera so you can get a look at it, Lisa, but for the viewers, I'll describe it. So take a look at that. Have you ever used an iPad with a keyboard?
I have.
And what brand have you ever used? Like Logitech
Kensington.
Or something? Kensington.
I think it was Kensington. They sent it to me when I was still writing reviews for mymac.com. I have one I believe I bought and one I believe they sent me. I just don't use my iPad in that way. Because I use it more for consumption than for actual getting work done. So I completely understand why people would want the keyboard. Mm-hmm. I just use the Apple Pencil as a stylus. You know, so when I have to type something out, I just use the Apple Pencil.
I'm really loving this. I'm trying to use it more and more because it is a bit of an adjustment to try to get used to the form factor of the keys. I can't say I would recommend this. Now, this is, keep in mind, this is the 11-inch... I keep wanting to say MacBook because I'm holding it as a laptop. So I'm fumbling over the words here. So pardon me for that. But this is the 11-inch iPad Air. So if you are someone who has bigger hands, then I would probably recommend the larger iPad because this for me is fine because I have smaller hands. But it's kind of, you know, it's very a small form factor. It's, you know, kind of cramped. So my husband's tried to use it and he's okay with it. You know, he'll adapt to pretty much anything. But for somebody with bigger hands, I could see how they might fumble around on this, but I'm getting used to it. It's got, you know, little arrow keys. You do have to kind of learn where the little shortcut keys are. There's a little globe key here that you can press. It's a modifier key. And what I love about it, you can already tell, right? You know what I'm going to say next. You can tell by looking at the backlight, right?
Does this have something to do with being purple?
Yes, of course. Not just purple, but you can change the... That was my biggest criteria, was that it had to have backlit keys. Because I do have other Bluetooth keyboards that I can connect to this. But of course, they're just a freestanding keyboard. They don't attach to the iPad. So of course, that's going to go swimming in my bag. And they don't have a backlight. And I want to be able to use this in the dark. And I'm more of a touch typist than a traditional typist. So I still have to, you know, look at the keys from time to time. And especially when it's a brand new keyboard and it's a slightly different form factor than what you're used to. So you're still kind of looking around. So I did really want to have the backlight keys. Plus, my eyes aren't getting any younger either. But you can change it to 12 different colors. And you can just cycle through all the different colors. You know, it's got red, blue, teal, white, you know. So it's got 12 different colors that you can change. And of course, I just keep it to purple. Had to have purple.
I've never heard that feature before.
Oh, yeah?
With other... Yeah, maybe they do have them, but I've never, you know, like I said, I don't use them, so I've never looked into it. But that's something I've never heard when people describe their keyboards, that you can change the color of the backlight.
Mm. Yeah, and you can change the brightness of it. So, of course, you know, if you're in the dark, sometimes you don't want it to be so bright. You want to keep it a little bit dimmer. So, yeah, you can change the brightness of the keyboard, the color of the backlight of the keyboard. And it's Bluetooth, so it's wireless. And then the nice thing about it is the way that it's balanced, and it's all held on by a magnet, of course, but you can kind of hold it like a book. So when you are holding it to read a book, actually, it feels just like you're holding it like a book. You can kind of, I've walked around the house with this on a Zoom call and things like that, and I'm just kind of balancing it on my palm in one hand. And again, this is the smaller iPad, so it's I won't say it's super paper light. I mean, it is the iPad Air. And of course, this is going to definitely add some heft to it. It's definitely a heavy keyboard because it's, you know, full of magnets and everything. But I like the way that it's weighted because when you hold it like this, you can hold it one-handed and weight it in your palm like this. It is like holding a book. It's like you're walking around with a thick book in your hand. So I really appreciate the way that it handles. And you can tilt it back, and you can even, I'm not going to do it while I'm talking to you because I'm liable to just drop it, but you can take the iPad off and then turn it and rotate it so it's in portrait mode. So if you wanted to type, I don't know why you would do that necessarily, but because I would rather just keep it in in horizontal in landscape mode while I'm typing. But you could, if you wanted to, you could rotate it and put it into portrait mode and have it resting on an angle in this magnetic view if you wanted to. And then I like the fact that the keys are recessed and there's these little bumpers down here so that when you do close it, you don't get an indentation, you don't get an imprint of the keys on the screen. Okay. So when you open it up, you don't see any markings from the screens. You still just see your greasy fingerprints.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you're going to see that. And I'm really fastidious about, you know, trying to keep it clean. Because the other thing about this iPad Air is that the camera is mounted on the side here. You know, now when you're using it in this form factor where it's landscape mode and you're kind of using it as it were a laptop, then the camera is at the top like you're used to with your laptop. That's why it feels so much more like a laptop. But when you're holding it in portrait mode, then the camera is over here on the right-hand side. And you would think that that's strange and you'd have to look to your right. But for some reason, I don't know how it works, but it still tracks. It makes it look like you're looking straight ahead. I don't know how it does it. It's magic. But the nice thing about this also is that it's got a trackpad. So then you have like a little mouse pointer that you can move around. And I really like that. It really feels like you're using a laptop. And of course, the biggest reason why I got this is because, you know, I eat my own dog food. So when I'm working with clients and they're having accessibility or difficulty using things, I wanted to have this as an option to kind of show them you might want to consider this if you still want to have the touchscreen experience or if you just like the interface that a touchscreen experience like an iPad or an enlarged iPhone, if you will, provides, but you also want to be able to use a keyboard and a stylus like the pencil, because see, then there's a loop here. So the Apple Pencil will connect to it magnetically at the top. But what's nice about the flap here is there is a little loop that you can slide the pencil into. And I just do that because I'm a little more accident prone. And then that keeps the pencil in there. So it doesn't slide off.
I would prefer the loop too, because yeah. I have a tendency mm-hmm. of knocking the pencil off.
Exactly. So I do keep it in the loop, even though I could just attach it on there. Boy, talk about our do not disturb failing here. Mine just did the same thing. We were talking about that, how I did have it on for until the end of the event. I'm just going to keep it on until the end of this evening.
No, at least you had a good ringtone.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's one song I don't get sick of. So let me just fix that real quick. Anyway, so where was I? So yeah, so the Apple Pencil will slide right into the loop there, and it attaches, the loop then attaches to the back magnetically.
Yeah, so, you could hear the snapping.
Mm-hmm. So when you close this up, then you just take the loop and you flip it around to the front. And then it's got this little metal piece in here. It says ESR on it. And I thought about maybe I could put like a little sticker or, you know, something over the top there. And then what's really nice is if you look at the bottom here, so I'm showing you the bottom where the ports are. So mm-hmm. you notice how you can see the port, the USB-C charging port for yep. the iPad. And then you also see when I'm looking straight at it, just to the left of it is also, again, USB-C. None of that USB mini or micro, or I guess it's mini B, none of that business. Also, USB-C charging port for the keyboard right to the left of that. So I can still charge with one USB-C cable. I can either take turns with that one cable or just have a second cable there if I needed to. But this keyboard holds a charge for a long, long time, like months at a time.
Oh, they're amazing. Yeah. I mm-hmm. haven't used mine and I couldn't tell you how long, but if I went and got it right now and turned it on, it would turn on. Now, how long would it last? That's another story.
Yeah.
But it would at least turn on.
Right.
So
right.
they hold a charge forever.
Yeah. So the batteries in them last a long time, and I always keep a charger around anyway, because you know I have battery anxiety. So that's I'm really enjoying that toy that I've been playing around with. Like I said, just trying to get used to typing on it with a keyboard. But man, it is like having another little second laptop, you know, hanging around. And it's just nice to be able to switch between the Mac OS ecosystem, the Mac OS user interface, and then the iPad OS interface. And it kind of gives me the opportunity to kind of compare and contrast which is better for different sets of needs of people. So, for example, when I think about there's certain kind of people, there's certain people with certain needs that features on the iPad OS would just be better suited for them. You know, there are just certain accessibility features that I'm learning about that I think would be better suited to, say, people with low vision, you know, or cognitive decline, or, you know, things like that, that they would be able to get around and navigate on an iPad better. Plus, then there's also, I mean, at least today, right now, they might get into a little bit less trouble on an iPad. Plus, there's less maintenance, too. You know what I mean? Like, on a Mac, there just is more maintenance. There's more individual app updates to deal with. There's just so many more apps. Whereas on an iPad, you can really, really pare this down. I mean, you can delete just about almost every single app that it comes with, except for maybe about a handful of maybe five or six that are, I think, I don't remember the exact count, but you can delete everything except for a few stock Apple apps that are basically built into the system that you just can't get rid of. And you can just hide them. Like, they don't even have to show up on the homepage. And you can just populate it with only the apps that the person will use. And then you can just make everything really huge and just really, really, really simple. And that's all they have to navigate. You know what I mean? There's just so many things that you can do to an iPad to really make that experience incredibly simple, whether it's for a small child or maybe, you know, an older loved one who just wants to surf the internet and that's it, you know, or just wants to use, you know, one or two apps and that's it. So, and just kind of keep them without, you know, having to deal with a lot of maintenance. So
that's my 91-year-old aunt uses her iPad, and that's what my cousin does. He has taken her iPad and he has stripped it.
Yep.
And just said to her, this is FaceTime, so you can do video chats.
Yep.
This is your messaging app. And that's what she uses. And it's cool. And I messaged her yesterday. She wasn't home. And I sent her a text and I sent her FaceTime. And she happened to be at dinner when she came back. She goes, oh, I see you called me. And she just was able to FaceTime me back.
That's great.
So she understands that, but there's certain concepts she's still struggling with. Like, if I send her a picture, she'll say, I can't find the picture. It's on my iPad. And she doesn't understand, she thinks it just shows up on her iPad. Like, no, I sent it via messages.
Somewhere.
And then if you want, you can take it out of messages and you can put it on your desktop or you can put it in photos. She doesn't understand
that concept yet. They're concepts that are really kind of difficult and abstract.
Yeah, 91 years old and she's still doing it.
Yeah, you got to give her credit for trying, and that's what keeps them going. There's an accessibility feature that's called guided access and assistive access that you might want to check into. Assistive access basically really simplifies it. I mean, we're talking like it just puts. Like, if you only want the person to use three apps, like messaging, like, say, if it was an iPhone, you only want them to be able to use messages and the phone and the clock, you can make it so that only those three squares show up on their phone, and that's it. I mean, you can really, really simplify it, you know, for, like, say, I wish this was around when my kids were younger, because I could have, like, put it into that mode and made it, like, a dumb phone. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, you've lost your technology privileges. That's it. Your phone is going into assistive access mode. So if there's any parents listening, there's a feature there. It's not just for disability people. It's for teenagers that back talk too. Yeah. Pro tip there. Anyway, so like I said before, though, too, just before I left the house, I did update to iOS or iPadOS 18.1. So we're finally there. We're finally in the 0.1. I've been kind of waiting for that. I know I probably should wait a little bit longer, but I've just been itching to update because there's features that I really want to play around with. Like, I can't wait to dig into photos. So I haven't even done that yet because I just did it before I left the house. So we're now up to iPadOS 18.1 because both my TVs are at 18. I don't know why they haven't gotten the 0.1 update. I guess they don't follow the same path. I'm not touching the Mac for a while yet because I still have to really go through that list and make sure that any of the apps that I've used are up to date, you know, that are ready. And that's quite a bit of a list, especially now that I have set up. I mean, I'm sure that set up will, you know, let me know what's compatible. So I'm sure I'll be able to go in and figure that out pretty easily.
I can't think off the top of my head, but there's supposed to be a website that you can go to that has a list of all those apps that will put a check mark or an X.
Yeah, I know I have a bookmark
somewhere.
For the
ones that are Sequoia ready. I can't remember the name of the – can't remember. Someone's out there screaming it going, it's-
yes, it's this one. Yes, yeah. I have it bookmarked, so when we get to that point, when we're ready to do that, we'll put a link to that in the show notes when we go to do that episode. But for right now, I'm just kind of more concerned about the iOS and the iPadOS devices. So I just wanted to start with my iPad first and see how it goes. Because I'll tell you what my main concern is. I'm excited for all of the features, except I'm a little bit concerned about mail filtering and the categories. And so before we sat down to record, that was the first thing that I looked at was I went right into the settings. And the first thing that I noticed is that, and again, this is just like, I'm kind of taking one for the team here. I just went into settings. I went to look in the sidebar and I noticed the first thing that was different that I noticed is that now it's general accessibility and then it's Apple Intelligence and Siri. It has this, you know, pretty like rainbow star looking icons. That's interesting. And when I tap on that, it says Apple Intelligence and Siri, a personal intelligence system integrated deeply into your iPad apps and Siri. Learn more. Then it says join the Apple Intelligence waitlist, to which I haven't clicked through or anything. It says reserve your spot and get ready to experience intelligence that understands your personal context. Your account and device information, including device serial number, may be used to check eligibility and access. And then it says, discover Apple Intelligence, enhance your learning, express your creative side, and simplify your tasks. Learn more. So I haven't done any of that yet, and I don't want to yet until I learn a lot more about that, because I'm quite actually, honestly, I'm a little bit, I don't know if afraid is the right word. I'm trepidatious about the mail filter, and I'll tell you why. Because in Google land, and you know, I'm a little comparing apples to oranges here, but in Google land with mail, with Gmail at least, and I think I've seen it in Outlook too, they do their own intelligent, quote unquote, filtering or sorting, if you will, of email. And they have like, you know, what is it called? Important and promotions. I forget what the other categories are, but I don't like that, because I don't like them deciding what they consider to be important or what they consider to be promotions and things like that. Yeah, it's nice that they lump all the ads together. I mean, first of all, I don't even use Gmail on the web. I use the Mail app for all of my Gmail, for the Gmail accounts that I use. I use a mixture of a bunch of different email providers just so I can experience different things because of, you know, what I do for a living. But I have worked with clients who have not received email in their inbox, and some really important email too, you know, lost out on appointments or, you know, important messages from their clients because of that filtering, because Google decided that something was more important than something else. And so because they were relying on, because that's just how, you know, Gmail's like, hey, you know, look here first. We're going to float this stuff up to the top. You know, this is what's important. This is what you should click on. And so they did, because they're just, you know, they're guided by the interface, and, you know, you can't blame them for just following along with what Google's telling them to do. And so they're using the mail tool in the way that it's being instructed to use. And then they're missing out on important messages. And I just think that's not good. And so the way to get around that was to just turn that feature off. And they make it really difficult. They make it really hard, and it's really convoluted in the way that you have to go about trying to get it to just like, look, I just want an inbox. I just put it in my inbox. I will filter it. Okay. I will set up mail rules and stuff. I know the consequences is that your inbox is flooded. I get that. But let me decide how to filter it out. You know, I will use the VIP filter. You know, I'll say if it's in my contact list, if it's in this particular list, just put it in the VIP list. And that to me is important. You know what I mean? Of course, now if you're getting new clientele or new, you know, contacts, it's not going to be in there. But still, I mean, let me decide. Let me sort it. You know, let me sort it by the time it came in, or you know, if I'm looking for something, or let me say, you know, all of this stuff from these shopping places, let me build a filter that says, you know, I like to shop at Michael's, really I do, but let me put it in my own solicitations filter or mailbox or folder or whatever vernacular we're using with whatever provider, and let me do it. You know what I mean? So I'm a little concerned that Apple's starting to go in that path too. So I'm going to be looking out for that. And that's the thing that was the first thing that I looked for. So I'm happy to report that it doesn't look like it's just something that just gets turned on right away, which is what I would kind of expect. I don't think they would just like turn it on like, okay, here you go. We're just going to like, you know, handle it for you, which is what a lot of people are like really up in arms about with AI. It's like, oh, we're just going to turn AI on and like you don't have any choice in the matter. We're just going to do all the thinking for you. Like, no, it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems like from what I'm seeing, like it clearly says beta. It clearly says that it's in beta at the top here on the icon.
Well, I hope they wouldn't automatically turn it on. They would be getting so many customer support calls saying,
yeah,
where's my email?
Exactly.
I used to get an email every day from, you know, this company and now it's gone. I can't find it.
I think there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation that's swirling around out there about Apple's relationship with AI, and I'm still trying to learn about it too. But from what I know so far, and I had to look this up because you know, a client emailed me like really angry, like Apple's just going to put AI on our phones, and like that's it, like they're just going to put ChatGPT in our phones, and we don't have any say in the matter. And I was like, no, they're not just, first of all, ChatGPT is not their IP. It's not their thing. They don't own it. They're not just going to put it in your phone. Like you have to, if you want it in your phone, you can certainly turn it on, but you have to go get it. Like you have to implement it. They're not just going to turn it on for you. They're not just going to be like, okay, and you know what? I have to say, I can't fault people for thinking that. Okay. And I'll tell you why. And it boils down to two characters. And those two characters are you too. I hate to say it, but it's true. You know, I can't tell you, I've lost count of how many times people have grumbled and complained and whined to me about, what is this you too in my music? I don't want
this.
They
did it with Coldplay too.
Oh, really? That I haven't seen.
I could be misremembering, but definitely you too.
Yeah, definitely
went about it wrong. They should have said to people, hey, we're giving you this album for free if you want it.
Yeah. It wasn't
here.
Yeah. That was a lesson in mismanagement of the opt-in. Like, they should have allowed people to opt in. Like, I get why they did it. I don't necessarily agree with it. I'm in some ways, I'm kind of glad that they did it, only because it helps somebody like me, because it gives me the opportunity to explain to someone, well, here's how you can get rid of it. And then it gives me the opportunity to teach them how to hide something from their music library, you know, how to delete something or how to use their music library. But that may not be the lesson that they wanted to. And they don't want to have to pay for that either. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But yes, I agree. That was a lesson in, this is not how you handle. Yeah, you don't just like push things on people. So that is like a forever mistake that will probably follow them around and haunt them. Just like the Apple, you know, the two Apple mice that were the horrible designs, the hockey puck mouse, the little Bondi blue circular mouse, and the mouse that charges under the underside. And now, did you see the little mini, the micro mini? What we're going to call it. The micro mini is what I'm going to call it, where the power button's on the underside. Yeah, people are not liking that too much either. So, but it looks adorable, but
oh,
yeah.
The mouse, the iMac mouse?
No, that's what I was talking about, where you have to charge it. You can't use it while you're charging it because you have to plug it in on the other side.
Yeah, I've heard the horrible thing. Actually,
do you have one? It came with a lot of the iMacs. But no, they just released a mini They just released a really tiny mini that fits in the palm of your hand, a new Mac mini.
So you can see right there.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. The computer I inherited from my father.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately switched it out for a wireless, you know.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, but have you seen the new Mac mini that just came out?
No.
Oh, it's teeny tiny. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's basically, like, I imagine it's just a little bit, it's about the same size as an Apple TV, but a little bit taller is what it looks like.
I've never used a Mac mini.
But that's what the new Mac mini looks like. But people are already pointing out that the power button is on the underside of it. You have to flip it over to turn it on or off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, do they ever use test groups?
I know, it makes you wonder.
To say, okay, I want you to use this like you would normally use it every day.
Right.
And there you are going, where do I turn it on?
Yeah, exactly.
That should be your first clue.
Right. It's like, could you please come to my mother-in-law's house? And, you know, and I don't want to pick on my mother-in-law, father-in-law or whatever. I don't want to engender it or be sexist or anything like that. I mean, could you come to my uncle's house? Could you just take this cross-section of people, you know, these vintage people, and then can you go into this kindergarten classroom here, and then can you go into this middle school, like, take this, you know, these different demographics of people, these cross sections of different people, and can you just, like, put it in front of them and just observe, you know, and see what they do with it, and then take that data and study it, please. Or just give it to me. I mean, I'll just make your life easier. Come on, Apple, seriously, give me a call, you know.
Yeah. We'll have lunch. We'll talk.
You know how to get a hold of me, you know? I've made it really easy for you. Anywho, so yes, I'm loving this. I'm loving my new iPad, and I love this little laptop thing I've got going on here. And so next, I'm going to be digging into iPadOS 18.1. So I'm happy to report that, my mail is still safe so far, and I haven't seen anything wonky happen with it just yet. But that was the first thing that I was concerned about. I do like the fact that now the apps, instead of, you know, how on the left sidebar you'd have to scroll and scroll and scroll. Well, for people like me who have a bazillion apps, you have to scroll and scroll and scroll for every. Now you just tap the word apps, and now it's chunked into sections alphabetically. So you have the A section, the B section, the C section, and the D section, and you can scroll alphabetically by letter. So that makes it a lot easier to navigate for people who can, you know. It's nice that it's all alphabetized, but I like it that it's chunked into groups. I also noticed too, one last observation before we move on, that I have decided to keep my iPad. I'll show you how I have it set up here. I have just one home screen with my, I'll take the brightness down so you can see, with my, just my main apps that I use all the time, and then a couple of widgets that I have, a couple of pages that I can swipe through. And then on my second home screen, what I normally have come up is my app library. But since I've updated, now I know that the two apps that they've added are Calculator and Passwords. So that's because in Calculator, there's a new visual math or something. So my husband's going to like that because he's a physics teacher, and he's going to enjoy playing with the Apple Pencil in there. So I'll have to report back on that. And then, of course, we have the new Passwords app, but we're one password user, so.
Well, speaking of that, I was watching a screencast online yesterday with Don McAllister, and he was comparing and contrasting 1Password versus the Apple Password app. Mm-hmm. And his bottom line was, if you're a 1Password user, continue being a 1Password user.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you have no password manager, then Password would be good.
Yeah.
The thing, though, with Password on your phone is it doesn't have a master password like 1Password has.
Right.
Whatever code you use to unlock your phone is how you unlock passwords.
That's what bugs me. That's what bugs me. Because I think about the people, like, you know, say, I don't know, somebody that you know in the neighborhood that asks you for help, right? And they don't know the first thing about a password manager. Yeah, it might be good for them because it's better than maybe using the piece of paper that they can't read their handwriting anymore. Or they think they're being so clever by using a Word doc that is synced to the cloud somewhere that's insecure.
I still
insecure.
Know people who yeah. tell me that. Yes. They say, yes. oh, I have a notebook next to my computer. I'm just uh-huh. like, you're killing me.
Right next
me.
To the computer.
You're
yeah.
ju- like, yeah. Like some of my brain cells just like yes. oozed out of my ear. You're killing me.
Yes, exactly. I know somebody who just got hacked because, you know, it was quote unquote Microsoft calling. And they answered the call, and then they allowed that person on the phone to remote into their, this is on a PC, they allowed the person to remote into their PC and control their computer. Mm. And then they said, oh, well, we need you to call this phone number. And then they said, that doesn't sound right. That's when they raised the flag, and then they ended the call. But they had already let the person into their computer. And they asked me what I should do, and I said, take it to Best Buy, take it to Geek Squad, go get it cleaned up. And they did, but then they were going to charge them $100 to have it triaged, to, you know, just to have it a diagnosis done. And they didn't want to pay that. And they said, well, we'll just change a few passwords. I said, okay, good luck with that. That's your choice.
Call your bank.
Yep. Yep. And
call,
I just said,
you know, your credit cards.
I hope there's nothing of importance or anything business related on that laptop, because if there is, you have a fiduciary responsibility to notify people that you've been breached, because who knows what that hacker might have installed during their time with you that yeah. they were
and
in.
And if
there,
you have a you good know? Backup, you can just wipe it out to factory settings mm-hmm. and then bring it back from the backup.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case here, but
yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that person's going to be okay, but yeah, it's we'll find out what happens. But yeah, so password management, you know, if you have a password manager, it's easy to do an audit on all your passwords in case that were to happen. But when you don't have a password manager, because I did help somebody in the field with this where that was the case, it was another PC user. They didn't have any sort of password management. Their password management was using the same password everywhere. And the only time that their password differed was when they had to, when they were made to use a different password, and of course they just changed the number, you know, or,
exactly.
or used an
they'll
exclamation
do,
point.
Yeah,
or,
my dog one, mm-hmm. my dog mm-hmm. two, my dog exactly. three, or they'll make the mm-hmm. O a zero,
yep.
the E a three.
Right.
You don't
no
think
entropy.
A hacker can figure that out?
Exactly. And it's not even a human hacker that does it. It's a robot algorithm that does it. Yeah. And so what ended up happening there after the person got scammed out of $2,000 and they couldn't get any of that money back because they had gone all the way through with it. I mean, there was no, you know, at some point in these scams, you can report it to the police. You know, at some point in time, if you don't go all the way through with it, you can sometimes get some of your money back. But this was a case where no, they went all the way. They drained out their bank account. They followed all the instructions of the scam artist on the phone, and they followed, you know, they did everything that they were told to do, and so they just weren't able to get any relief from it. So they lost out on the money. Not only that, then they had to pay more money to somebody like me to go and, like, you know, rescue them with basically resetting all of their passwords. So of course, you know, we bought, they had them buy, you know, a subscription to 1Password. We used that as the tool, had them go and reset all of their usernames, passwords, you know, for everything. And, you know, it took a couple of hours to go through all of their accounts and change everything, do a whole mm-hmm. entire audit. And they had to order new credit cards, of course, for everything. But now that they have it, now they're safer because now they log in with all of this new information. But man, that was a really hard lesson to learn. And it's sad, you know, I hate that that's my job. Like, I hate that that's necessary. You know, I want to take a shower at the end of the day.
Yeah. I just hate that there's people out there that yeah. don't give it a second thought.
Right.
You think, I'll take advantage of vulnerable people and I yeah. sleep well at night. Like,
yeah,
how do you
exactly.
knowingly do that to somebody?
Whereas it keeps me up at night that there's a need for a job like mine. I don't yeah. like that.
I mean, you
I'm
know how bad you feel when
person.
You hurt someone unintentionally, mm-hmm. how you feel horrible about it. How yeah. do you do it intentionally?
Yeah. Yeah. They're just, it's unconscionable. And it is, like, they have no conscience about it. And I think that's what makes it happen. Or maybe they just, I don't know, maybe they're brainwashed and they think that they're doing a service somehow. I don't know.
Ugh.
I don't know how they get talked into it. I don't know.
Yeah,
so that was our little security section for the day. So
yeah, and on to something lighter. onto that happy note, I think we will wrap up for the day, make this a little bit of a shorter episode. So Melissa, if people would like to get in touch And we have lots of ways now.
We do.
How would they do so?
We do. We have a variety of ways. We have our website, which is geekiestshowever.com. So head over there. And then we also have a contact tab that you can click on and you can fill out the form and that'll send us a message. Or if you prefer, you can just use the old school email. We have an email address, which is podcast@geekiestshowever.com. And you can also follow us on social media. So we are on the socials. And where are we at on the socials?
We are on Threads and Instagram and Blue Sky at Geekiest Show Ever. And if we're on Mastodon, we are at Geekiest Show Ever at techhub.social. I am at, where am I at? On Mastodon, I am at senseidai at mastodon.social. Also on Blue Sky, I just opened up an account the other day. I am at senseidai. Melissa is at the Mac Mommy at mastodon.cloud. Doing good here. Threads at the Mac Mommy. And just go to themacmommy.com for all things Melissa.
That's me.
So with that, we would like to say thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Make sure you vote this week. And until then, please stay safe.